This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. If you had asked Richard Strauss what kind of a composer he was, he would have said an opera composer. And with successes like Salome, Elektra, Der Rosenkavalier, and others, it would be hard to argue with him. But even before his operatic triumphs, he had made a reputation as a composer of tone poems, picking up where Franz Liszt had left off with works like Don Juan, Don Quixote, and Also Sprach Zarathustra. One of his most famous tone poems, Till Eulenspiegel's Merry Pranks, was originally planned as an opera, but it was during the rehearsals for his first stage work, Guntram, in 1894, that his life would change forever when he met the woman who would be his wife and his muse for the next 55 years. Paulina de Anya was a soprano, and by all accounts, difficult, eccentric, and outspoken, but she was fiercely protective of her husband, kept track of all his business affairs, and inspired some of the 20th century's greatest vocal works, along with one very autobiographical tone poem. At the time of his wedding, Strauss had been busily making a name for himself as a conductor. He had had a valuable apprenticeship with Hans von Bülow, who had championed many great composers, including Wagner, Brahms, and Tchaikovsky. This was followed by appointments in Weimar and Munich, all of which left Strauss frustrated, bored, and in some way dissatisfied. But in 1898, he signed a 10-year contract as principal conductor at the Court Opera in Berlin, which gave him the security, confidence, and good humor to take on the rest of the world in a piece of music he was referring to at the time as Held und Welt, the hero and the world. Ein Heldenleben, which is what Strauss eventually called the work, is usually translated as a hero's life, but it could be argued that a heroic life comes closer, which brings us to the troublesome question of extra-musical meaning. First of all, Strauss was obviously aware of the dangers of calling anything symphonic eroica. On July 23rd of 1898, he wrote to a friend, in words that we can't imagine nowadays, quote, "Since Beethoven's Eroica is so unpopular with conductors and thus rarely performed, I am now, in order to meet what is clearly an urgent need, composing a big tone poem with the title Heldenleben. To be sure, without a funeral march, but still in E-flat major and with very many horns, which are, after all, stamped for heroism." End quote. Strauss was always ambivalent on the subject of extra-musical meaning. It irritated him when people would ask about the program of a piece, but he would give them one anyway, insisting that music's business was to say only those things that music could uniquely say, but also that art with no human content was no art at all. In 1906, he summed up his feelings on the subject when he wrote this, quote, "For music not to lose itself in total arbitrariness or dissolve somehow into the boundless, it has need of certain boundaries, and a program can provide such bounds. An analytical program isn't meant to be more than a kind of handhold for the listener. Whoever is interested in it, let him use it. Anyone who really knows how to listen to music probably doesn't need it anyway." End quote. The first large section of Ein Heldenleben depicts the hero in all of his ever-changing moods, swaggering, sweet, impassioned, grandiloquent, and of course, sumptuously scored. A big build-up, then a pregnant pause, and suddenly we're in the world of the hero's adversaries, the naysayers, the fault-finders, and yes, the critics. The music is sharp, prickly, dissonant, The directions to the performers say things like cutting and pointed, snarling, hissing. And underneath all this nastiness, the tubas stubbornly grind away in parallel fifths, a musical progression which had been frowned upon for almost 300 years. Strauss threw in enough musical clues to make sure that the critics in Berlin would recognize their roles in the composer-slash-hero's life. The next time the hero's theme appears, it is taken on a darker tone. But then, one violin detaches itself from the others to unfold the vivid portrait of the hero's companion, in this case, Paulina. Quote, "She is very complicated," Strauss said. "Très femme, a little perverse, a bit of a coquette. Never the same twice, different each minute from what she was a minute earlier." End quote. Strauss wrote all of that into the violin solo. At the beginning, the hero follows her lead, picking up the pitch she has just sung, but she runs farther and farther away, daring him to follow. Finally, he says, "All right, go. I'm staying here." And he withdraws into his thoughts, his own key. But then she goes after him. Once again, Strauss is not only descriptive, but specific. Flippant, tender, a little sentimental, exuberantly playful, gracious, emotional, angry, nagging, loving. These are some of the directions to the violinist in this scene. The single violin is again absorbed into the rest of the orchestra, and we hear love music, as lush as only Strauss could make it. The adversaries are still out there, though, and they cause a brief disturbance in this tender scene, but now their cackling is heard as though from a distance. Nonetheless, the hero must go into battle to vanquish them. The sound of trumpets introduces an immense sonic canvas, the hero's battlefield. The hero returns in triumph. Or, in musical terms, it's the recapitulation, just as if this were a formally structured 18th century symphony. The music becomes more quiet, and we have arrived at one of the most remarkable sections of the score, the hero's works of peace. When he was accompanying song recitals, Strauss used to build bridges from one song to the next by quietly playing passages from his operas, passages that would turn out to be closely related to the song they prepared. The musical tapestry Strauss weaves here is both dense and delicate. If there were any question as to whether or not the composer is the hero, it's completely dispelled here, as Strauss combines music from Don Juan, Also Sprach Zarathustra, Death and Transfiguration, Don Quixote, Macbeth, and his song Traum durch die Dämmerung, Dreaming at Twilight. It's one of Strauss's orchestral miracles, richly blended, yet a constantly astonishing, shifting kaleidoscope of textures and colors. Even at this point, the adversaries have not been completely silenced. The hero rages at them, but his passion gives way to renunciation. The final section is called The Hero's Escape from the World and Completion. The hero retires, and after final recollections of his battling and his loving self, the music subsides in profound serenity. In Strauss's original version, this passage carried through to a pianissimo close with just violins, timpani, and a single horn. A friend of Strauss's protested, "Rickhardt, another pianissimo ending? People won't believe that you even know how to end forte." So, in the few days between Christmas and the New Year, Strauss composed the present ending. Still tranquil, but more ambiguous. What happens to the hero? Paulina, the hero's companion, returns, and together they ride off into the sunset. Or is it the sunrise? And yes, Strauss's friends were pleased. Ein Heldenleben might not end with a bang, but neither does it end with a whimper. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.